Proponents have long said Michigan needs a smarter and more modern criminal justice system. An ongoing effort took a turn 2 weeks ago when the state Senate passed a package of about 20 related reform measures. Supporters, including our first guest, say they'll help reform and modernize Michigan's criminal justice system. Republican State Senator John Prose says they'll break a cycle of incarceration here in Michigan and lower the system's soaring costs while keeping the public safe. The Michigan House of Representatives is expected to begin considering these bills when it returns to Lansing. To learn more about the measures, their prospects, and why criminal justice reform is important here in Michigan, we welcome the leader of the legislative effort in the Senate, Senator John Prose of St. Joseph. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Mark. Thank you. And I'll tell you what, I don't know that I've been in a radio or television studio that had that kind of an intro. Absolutely fantastic for the trio.
These guys are really good.
It was awesome.
And we are really excited to have them here. Before we look at your Senate measures, I ought to get your reaction to the bill Governor Snyder signed yesterday, and I'm led to believe this you had a hand in what the governor signed just yesterday. Our listeners have been hearing about it since they got up this morning. This new law will encourage judges to send younger offenders into alternatives to jail and alternatives to programs that put them into contact with adults who commit crimes. Okay, it sounds sensible enough. Do you agree with what's in this new law?
Well, I sure hope so, given the fact that I authored the legislation in the legislature and passed it both through the House and the Senate. The governor signed it this week, and I'm glad that the governor recognizes that this is the first of the opportunity that we have to see some modernization of the Michigan criminal justice system. And Mark, I want to be sure that your listeners understand that when we talk criminal justice, we're not just talking about inside the walls of our prison system. This isn't just a Department of Corrections question. The question really relates to an entire timeline of crimes that are committed by individuals, all the way from our juvenile justice side of the equation, all the way through probation, our prison system, and parole. Are we doing the right things with all of those taxpayer dollars to ensure that there is success along that timeline? It is an inestimable amount of money that we can save at any point that we can divert somebody from that life of crime, let alone the cost to society, the cost to criminal justice system overall, the cost to victims and victims' families who have to deal with the cost of crime in their own lives. This particular package comes from one of my probate judges, Judge Susan Dobrich out of Cass County, who looked at this and said, you know, if we were able to, with first-time offenders, really low-level first-time offenders in the juvenile justice system, gather them together with the right resources around, with the agreement of all of the different individuals, the prosecutor, the defense, all the folks who could try to assist in the process of wrapping services around them, we'd be in a much better place to help to divert them from a life of crime rather than criminalizing them right out. That said,
where did we go wrong, though? Mm-hmm. I mean, that all sounds so commonsensical. Where did Michigan go wrong?
So Michigan hasn't necessarily gone wrong. Some of our courts already do this. What we did is we codified it to allow our courts to do it as a part of a structure now. Not every prosecutor is going to agree that a consent calendar, which is the term that's used, is available for an offender because the offender may have done something heinous. Even as a juvenile, that offender needs to go through the proper processes and or be admitted to the adult court where then the adjudication would happen or the criminal justice system will continue to work its way. In this case, we're talking about individuals who we may be able to divert more quickly, more structurally with the kind of people that surround them that help to give them the best chance to succeed in the future. I think it's a step in the right direction. And like I say, it's the first of a very comprehensive series of bills that we're working on in the Senate that are now over in the House of Representatives.
And before we go any further, I want to make clear to our listeners that criminal justice reforms have also recently cleared the House of Representatives. We will get into the differences between the House measures and yours here in just a minute, because obviously you've got to come together here at some point before you send anything to the governor. Is it fair to say the focus of the Senate bills is reducing recidivism?
I think that's a fair point to make, and the question of recidivism is one that really is a definitional question. How do you define recidivism, meaning a return to prison, or is it a failure on probation or parole where you've failed to do what you're supposed to do? And because we don't have a statutory definition, everybody inserts what they believe to be the definition of what recidivism is. So if you want the numbers to look good, then all you have to do is define it the way that you want to define it. In this case, we're putting into statute the definition of recidivism in the bills that passed the Senate, amongst many other portions of the package itself. Then we can all look at whether or not we're succeeding with those tax dollars being used for the benefit of decreasing crime and increasing the productive nature of those who have committed those crimes once they've served their time.
Is Michigan's rate of recidivism worse than other states or the national average?
I don't think you can make comparisons because we can't define it appropriately without us putting together a statutory definition that we all agree that we can look to as the standard. We ping against it. The standard.
So that's why that is a part of...
That's a major component of this bill.
Your measure. Yes. The House measures, I know, that have passed include provisions involving presumptive parole. Now, you told M Live last month that it was important to discuss presumptive parole going forward. Did you have that discussion?
We've not had that discussion as yet. The focus was on at least moving the Senate package at first. Once we've done that, which we now have, and by the way, I should note that it is Republicans and Democrats that have supported the measures out of the Senate, then we can shift our attention towards additional bills in the package and the good work that the House of Representatives has done also. But here's the question on presumptive parole that we need to ask. Why is it that somebody is not prepared to go before the parole board? And if they're not prepared to go before the parole board, you have to ask the question of what has the Department of Corrections done to do their best to prepare them to go before the parole board at their earliest release date.
Let's back up and share with our listeners just a good working definition of presumptive parole, though.
So presumptive parole states that at your earliest release date, so a judge will impose a sentence of 5 to 10 years. Let's just use it as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So at 5 years, that is your earliest point at which you can be released according to the judge's sentence. You are then eligible to go before the parole board if you have met certain criteria, which is a large statutory requirements that the parole board has to look at. Dozens of very specific points. Are you a menace to society inside the prison? Is your crime of commitment to prison, is that, are you remorseful? Are there things that you have done to take the proper coursework to be prepared to go back out into society? Because Mark, I don't know if you know this, but we have 42,400 prisoners in prison today. Within 3.5 to 4 years, every one of that population number will be turned over, meaning virtually everybody comes back to the communities from which they came from originally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a small percentage, of course, that ends up in life terms, and they're not going to ever get out of prison. But the majority of everybody else at some point is getting out of prison. So the question on presumptive is, are you prepared to go before the parole board? And if you're not, the parole board then flops you or says, nope, sorry, you have to come back in 2 more years. Because it's still within the 5 to 10 year time frame. So the parole board is there for public safety to ensure that those individuals who have been inside the walls are prepared to get out to be productive members of society. If we turn this on its head, which is what the House package does, the responsibility of the parole board is to prove that the individual is ready as opposed to making the individual prove that he or she is ready, regardless of earliest release date or not.
Now, I'm interpreting these as doubts about the presumptive, the role of presumptive parole in criminal justice reform coming from you from others in the Senate. So we can assume then that the result of the Senate measure, what came out of the Senate, included less relating to presumptive parole than what came out of the House.
Right. So none of the bills that are before the House of Representatives now that passed the Senate, 139-1, by the way, it was the total number of votes for and against, 139-1, all of those bills have no interest or no specific look at presumptive parole. But what it does do that would aid this whole idea of presumptive parole is it focuses attention on rehabilitation, and it focuses attention on the Department of Corrections to live up to its responsibility to help to rehabilitate people too. For example, some of the folks who go before the parole board have not yet been able to get into the courses that they're required to take to be eligible for parole. Well, they're a captive audience, and I don't mean that in the pejorative. They quite literally are our captives mm-hmm. because of public safety concerns. They're doing their time and paying society back for the failures that they had and the crimes they committed. Shouldn't we ensure that before you go before the parole board that you successfully complete the courses that are required? Some go before the parole board and they've never even had the course yet.
Will presumptive parole prevent criminal justice reform legislation from being enacted? Will
I don't believe
hang
so.
The whole thing up?
No, I don't believe so, because I think that there are ways that we can amend the House package that would be acceptable to most of the Senate and that would give us the best opportunity to try to address some of the concerns that duly elected representatives of the House of Representatives see as important. I don't think that makes it any less important. It just means that we're going to do our business to review them appropriately, too.
Your package of bills just got passed on June the 9th. I'm led to believe they're headed to the House's Criminal Justice Committee.
I'm not sure if they've been reported there yet or not.
Okay. I'm led to believe they could very well. They're as likely to end up there as any other committee.
It seems a logical parking spot, doesn't it?
Yeah. And Kurt Heise is the chairman of that committee. Have you had any contact with Mr. Heise about this
or
others in the House? What have those discussions been like?
Yeah, they've been very, very good discussions. In fact, these discussions have been going for some time. Representative Joe Haveman, who was term limited this past term, and Representative Heise has kind of picked up the baton from Representative Haveman. And Kurt and I have talked on multiple occasions. He has sat through many of the hearings that we had in the Senate, and he has been a champion for smart legislative changes, too. I look forward to working with him to make these things happen. And I'll point out, too, that the House has done some really good work, as has my colleagues who are the lead sponsors of these bills. Democrats and Republicans both are lead sponsors of these bills.
Representative Haveman was on this program not that long ago.
Yes.
I mean, this is a long effort, and I can only imagine the amount of time you have put in on this effort alone. I wanted to bring another voice into the conversation, though, here. Another recent guest, just last month, Barbara Levine of the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending visited this program. She's been on several times. She's following all of this. We talked yesterday. She really likes a pair of provisions in SB 932, and they involve parolees. One part would notify parolees in advance of the sanctions for violating parole. Another would limit the time a parolee serves in the event of what's called a supervisory violation, which I take it are often for pretty minor. These are relatively minor infractions, but the terms can go on for months. She referred to a loophole, though. Let's listen to more.
We think those are terrific standards, but there's an enormous loophole in the bill that allows the Department of Corrections to decide which parolees participate in this program. That is, the department could decide in which cases these constraints on their own ability to sanction would even apply. And that's the part we don't understand. We think these sanctions should apply to all parolees.
Can you shed some light on that?
Well, I can tell you, first off, that Barb and I have talked about this and other topics related to criminal justice for years now. In my term in the legislature, I've now spent the better part of 10 of my 12 years in the legislature running the corrections budget, either in the minority or the majority, and then also dealing very, very directly with the judiciary budget as the chair of the judiciary budget in the Senate then also. So all of these areas intersect, and Barb has had a hand in crafting the bills that are before the House of Representatives today. Interest groups across the state have all weighed in, have had changes incorporated into the bills prior to even passage in the Senate. I don't think that this is a Republican or Democrat issue, a Barb Levine or a John Prose issue. I think it's an issue that's best for Michigan citizens and Michigan taxpayers, helping to offload some of the terrible crimes that have been committed. If we can decrease that, we all win.
Could you vote for an imperfect measure?
You know what? I don't know that I've ever voted for a perfect measure in any legislative work that I've done. There's always something that I would have done differently.
What couldn't you vote for?
Well, I don't think that I can vote for letting criminals out on the street without there being the checks and balances that ensure that we have the best chance towards safety. Because after all, the constitutional requirements we have, first and foremost, is public safety.
Do you think the bills might be taken up still this summer? There are some working days here in the legislature this summer, or you're not really expecting anything substantive until the fall?
My hope is that Speaker Cotter And if Representative Heise, as chair of the Judiciary Committee, is the one that actually takes this up, not Judiciary, Criminal Justice Committee, excuse me, Representative Kesto is the chair of the Judiciary Committee. But if it goes to any one of those two committees, my hope is in these 9 legislative days that are left before lame duck, that in fact Speaker Cotter and those chairmen in the House bring these bills up as soon as possible. It's good for Michigan, and quite frankly, the changes that we're talking about are not going to be immediate savings. It's going to be downstream savings and downstream benefit to a reduction in crime and a decrease in the number of victims that we have in our state.
We want to thank our guest, State Senator John Prohs, Republican of St. Joseph here. He has just spearheaded a series of bills, a package of criminal justice reform measures through the Senate recently. We will keep a close eye on it and hope for some progress here. It was nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.